Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
Ferns usually play second fiddle in gardens. But in William Kalina's new book, Native Ferns, Moss, and Grasses, these emerald plants, subtle and sensuous, take their place front and center. Kalina directs research and development at the New England Wildflower Society, which runs The Garden in the Woods. 30 miles west of Boston in Framingham, Massachusetts, it's the premier botanical garden in the nation for plants native to America. A few weeks ago, Bill Kalina took me for a walk along snow-covered paths through the Garden in the Woods in search of native ferns, moss, and grasses.
The steps might be kind of slippery, so we can go, take this other path over here.
Now, what? Native ferns, moss, and grasses. And how come it's not mosses?
Well, technically it should be mosses. That was something that the publishers thought there were too many sounds in the title, so they decided to shorten it to moss. But when I first pitched this idea to my editor before I did the woody plant, she said, well, nobody's going to buy a book on green. You know, it's all green. And so I thought a lot. I joke about it in the book, and I was saying, well, I'm going to go around and buy some plastic flowers and stage them around in amongst all the ferns, you know, because you just naturally want to see color. But the more I thought about it and wrote about it and focused my own thinking on the matter, the grasses in the sun and ferns in the shade and mosses too really provide the texture and the background on which, you know, the wildflowers kind of paint, so to speak. You think about a meadow without grasses, it wouldn't look wild, it wouldn't really look appropriate. And the same way in most places in the woods, if you walk around in the woods, most of what you see in the understory, especially here in the Northeast, are ferns. You don't see huge blazes of wildflowers. You see them sort of scattered around. It's the ferns that really hold it all together.
Well, let's take a walk.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what Simon Garfunkel would call a hazy shade of winter.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we've had some years where it stays mild for a long time, and a lot of years when we have, you know, more than this snow by this time of year. But the property here is just under 50 acres, and you drove here, so you know it's this little sort of oasis in the middle of the suburban sprawl of Boston.
Well, there's a fern right there.
Yeah, this is a Christmas fern here, so named because it is one of the few truly evergreen ferns that live around here. So most of the ferns that will die back down to the ground during the wintertime, but this is really evergreen. People used to collect these fronds for Christmas decorations, you know, just a little bit of green. And people sort of joke, if you look at these and you pull one of these things off, it looked kind of like a little stocking, one of these leaflets.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's another, you know, sort of another wives tale. That's why it's called Christmas fern. But
what's the botanical name?
Polysticum acrosticoides. Most of the ferns have very interesting sort of tongue-twisting names, and that's one of the Polysticum acrosticoides. Yeah.
Give me some other examples of tongue-twisting names.
Well, among the ferns, one of my favorites is a glade fern. The Latin name of that is Diplasium pycnocarpon. And then we've got hay-scented fern, which is Denestadia punctilobula. So, you know, the Latin names really, especially with ferns, they're made to describe different features of the plants in Latin. They're not made to be sort of easy and friendly to pronounce. That's why common names like glade fern and hay-scented fern are kind of nice for people to have, too. But
lady fern.
Lady fern, yeah, that's a nice, easy one, too.
Right. Now, what about lady fern? I understand it's like the most popular here. Is that right?
Well, lady fern is one of the most abundant ferns around, and it's what I think of as kind of a quintessential fern. And if you sort of picture a fern in your mind, what a fern frond would look like and the texture of it and everything, that's pretty much what a lady fern looks like.
Is it true that lady ferns can be found in every state but Nebraska?
Yeah, I bet there's going to be somebody out there now in Nebraska proving us wrong, but according to the taxonomic work, yeah, that's basically... Why not Nebraska? Because Nebraska doesn't have much in the way of the sort of the woodland habitat that they do. Most of the other western states have enough higher elevation habitat somewhere that the lady ferns can grow. So there are some ferns like bracken fern, for instance, which is common in the woods around here. probably vying for the most common plant in the world. You can find bracken fern on just about every continent, from the the rainforests to the mountaintops, and the boreal forest to Florida and Asia and all over the place. It's amazing. Part of the advantage of something like that that's been around for so long, it's been able to colonize just about everywhere. So in parts of Asia, people actually collect and eat the fiddleheads of that species, but it's a highly toxic thing. And there's
toxic fern.
Yeah. You got to figure that if you've been around for millions of years, you've figured out how to prevent being eaten, right? So most ferns are loaded with defensive chemicals to prevent them from being eaten. And bracken fern has got several different kinds of poisons, so I certainly don't recommend eating it.
Really? Yeah, because when I think of ferns, I think of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And the ones that were back then, are they the same as now?
There's an amazing discovery, just in the last few years, they found there's a fern that grows around here called interrupted fern, Osmunda claytoniana. And it's a beautiful fern. It's a 3 foot high. It comes out of the ground. It has black, the spores that it reproduces with are in these special fronds that are black. So it's very sculptural when it comes out of the ground. And recently they found fossils in Antarctica, of all places, that are 200 million years old of this species. So it has remained unchanged for 200 million years. You think about all the species that have gone extinct in 200 million years, and this fern, unassuming fern, is now, it has survived. So it's doing something right.
Well, let's take a little bit more walk.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at this tree, and I was a Cub Scout, and we learned that moss only grows on the north side of the tree. This tree has moss on one side. Is that the north?
Well, there's two things we're looking at. We're looking at the lichens, which are going up.
That's not moss?
No. No, lichens are different than moss. The moss is on the bottom. What you see up on the sides of the trees, a lot of that are lichens, but the mosses are growing down around the base.
And the moss is growing all around the base.
Around it,
so
yeah.
The answer is?
That anywhere it's moist enough, the mosses will grow. So
I wasn't a very good Cub Scout, I got to tell you.
People say that all the time. You always look at the north, for the moss, and it's not very reliable because it depends on how sheltered the area is and that sort of thing. But there are thousands of different moss species in the U.S. One of the most amazing mosses are the sphagnum mosses, or the peat mosses. And most people have probably heard of peat bogs or using peat moss in horticulture. And sphagnum mosses, what they do is typically the ones that form the bogs, they'll grow at the edge of a pond, and they start growing out into the water a little bit, forming a floating mat. And that, over time, it grows farther and farther out. And as that moss decomposes, the dead parts of the moss drop down, and they're very, very low in nutrients and very, very acidic. And they basically sort of poison the water so that nothing decomposes. You hear about people finding bog men and bog wood and that sort of thing in bogs, because it's so acidic, things just get kind of pickled in there. And other plants seed in and grow and can get going in that thing. But basically, the moss, like beavers or like people, is one of those few things that can actually just sort of shape its environment and create the habitat that it needs to grow. And that's kind of an amazing thing for a little tiny moss to be able to do that. And there are just, hundreds of millions of acres across Canada that are peat bog.
Bill, it would seem to me that you have the perfect job for somebody like you.
I do wake up every day and think that I'm very fortunate to be able to be doing what I love doing, and also to this kind of thing, talking with other people about it. Couldn't be happier.
Bill Kalina is Director of Research and Development at the New England Wildflower Society. His new book is called Native Ferns, Moss, and Grasses. Our story was produced with the help of Alexandra Gutierrez. On the next Living on Earth, American astronauts will soon have to hitch rides into space aboard Russian rockets.
The fact that we are dependent on another nation's resources, that doesn't scare me. In fact, I think we should celebrate that interdependence because, in fact, that may be what's required to fully realize our future in space.
Missile gaps and space races next time on Living on Earth.